Welcome to Philippa Squared, Parenting by Design, the podcast that dives deep into the heart of thriving through pregnancy, birth, and beyond. If you aspire towards exceptional parenthood and are looking to navigate the joys and challenges of raising children in our fast-paced world, you've found your tribe. I'm Philippa Scott and...
I'm Philippa Cox. Together we're Philippa Squared. Unpacking the real talk on modern parenting, peeling back the layers of its complexity from pregnancy and birth to the adventures beyond. This podcast is your guide to unraveling the nuances of parenting in today's world.
And we're keeping it real, sharing stories and having conversations with insightful guests, giving you clarity and direction on your parenting journey.
This is where your adventure begins. Transforming the challenge into a journey of wonder and joy, where you discover ways to craft your own parenthood map, not just follow the one handed down to you.
So settle in, get comfy, and let's laugh, learn, and grow into the parent you aspire to be. Welcome to Philippa Squared, Parenting by Design.
Hello and welcome to Philippa Squared, Parenting by Design. You're joining myself, Philippa Scott, and my beautiful co-host, Pippa Cox. Hi, Pippa.
Hi, Philippa. How are you today? Have you changed over the last 10 minutes that we were talking before?
No, I'm good. I'm still good.
You're still good. I see you got some beautiful lippy on. That's gorgeous. We've got some really, really exciting news, guys. Would you like, can I divulge the news?
Yeah.
Okay. So our dear darling, Philippa Scott, has been nominated for Businesswoman of the Year with our local business, Sunshine Coast Business Women's Network. So that's a massive, massive honour. So my hat goes off for you. A lot of hard work.
Thank you.
And it's awesome. Well done. Well done for you.
It was a privilege to have been nominated. It was very exciting to have been made a finalist. And by the time you're all hearing this, we'll know whether or not I actually won anything. But it's a privilege to even just be amongst those women who are making such a big impact in their communities. So thank you, Pippa, for acknowledging.
It's awesome, yeah. just have to let the cat out of the bag. Just have to do that.
Well, thank you.
Because thank you. This is not contributed to anything about what we're going to talk about today, is it? About shame.
Yeah. So we really wanted to talk about shame today because we feel that it's something that just doesn't get talked about enough, but it seems to be quite pervasive, particularly for women around conception, pregnancy, birth, breastfeeding, and they're not into parenting and being a housewife to some degree, and the shame that seems to be associated for women in all of that. And, you know, I'm sure you've heard it time and time again, you know, the idea about when you're teaching someone, even around their menstrual cycle, or teaching someone about how to know when they're ovulating, and you'll say, you know, what does your mucus feel like? What is, you know, how does your cervix feel? And people will say, I've never felt my cervix. We're like, well, your husband or your partner has. Why haven't you? You know, but there's shame in those experiences, and or there's a perceived shame in those experiences and what that looks like. You know, we're told we can't do our own vaginal exams during labor because, well, that wouldn't be...
We might get it wrong, for crying out loud. Come on, Philippa. we not know our own bodies. We might get that wrong.
Yeah, well, and you know what? It's so not even hard, right? But, we talk about it being a professional skill, but every 15-year-old boy on the planet just about's done a vaginal exam, right? Like, we talk about it being such a big thing, but, you know, okay, it might not be prescriptive or anything else, but it's, you know, but it's certainly not something that is taboo for women to be able to feel and know their own bodies on this level. But that shame goes far beyond. It goes to birth, right? I mean, what's the number one thing women are scared of during labor?
Pooping.
Pooping, right? They don't want to defecate during labor. And I distinctly remember the only birth I did defecate in was my fourth baby. And I remember her coming through. She was born really quickly. Like, she was a whole kilo lighter than her sister before. So I think it must have been like throwing a bowling ball down the hallway. She just kind of flew out. But all of a sudden, there's this baby's head on my perineum. And I said, "Shh." Yes. And honey said, "Yes, but is there baby too?" Which, you know, was funny then and it's funny now. But it is a big, you know, there's all this shame around what our bodies do, right?
So the interesting thing exactly about shame is that it's a social construct that we have adopted ourselves. It's like saying something is there, but it makes me bad. Not that that thing is bad.
Yeah.
But that thing is making me a bad person.
Yes. Yes.
So if someone...
And yep, I, feel go like on, this is, I feel like this is pretty new, because if you were on a ship crossing from, you know, I don't know, England to France even, or anywhere back in medieval times or before the advent of actual toilets, you had to defecate in a bucket, right? Like, and everybody had to do these things all within cooee of everyone else and then deal with it. And everybody was okay with it. And yet,
yeah,
we're not. We are supposed to be the most liberal, and yet we have all this shame around our own bodies.
Right? Yeah, and particularly with toileting. And the interesting thing is with toileting is that you go to different countries and they've got rooms and private in public toilets where people defecate together.
Yeah,
you've got people in India who defecate on the side of a road, though that is becoming less and less because India has got a put your poo in the loo campaign, public health campaign.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, which is kind of really cool. But it's still happening today, but in different cultures, toileting and ablutions isn't shameful. It's just seems as normal as eating.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and look, we had this conversation, my husband and I, recently, because we just acquired a van where he was talking about refurbing it and maybe not having a full room and maybe just having like a toilet space that could have a bench over the top of it and you could just lift it up and then you could just go in there and he said to me, "Oh, I don't mind if you go to the toilet while I'm there." I'm like, "Well, what if I mind?" He's like, "Yeah, but you leave the door open all the time when you go to the toilet." I'm like, "But you can't see me and I don't invite you in to talk to me while I'm going." Right? Like, and I know there are lots of couples who do share that and we just have never. I have no issues with him being there when I birth or all the other things, but that's one thing that I'd like to be able to do alone, and I do. So it, you know, we have these different things that we feel shame for, but those, you know, and you're right, it's a very much a socially constructed idea. What I think we see most, and so obviously there's all this shame that kind of happens around, you know, conception, menarche, pregnancy, birth, breastfeeding, and you know, hiding our breasts, even though, you know, we'll go to a local beach with not much more than a little triangle over our nipples. And so we have these, but, you know, but obviously, but once we're showing our breasts for what they're designed for, that they're shameful all of a sudden and we want to keep that hidden. And so we have all this socially constructed stuff around that. But that's a much shorter space in a person's life than when we then have shame around our parenting and shame around, you know, the role that we have, the shame that often exists for women in, do I go back to work? Do I not go back to work? Do I co-sleep? Do I not co-sleep? Do I bottle feed? Do I breastfeed? Do I, all of these things. And, you know, do I homeschool? Do I send them to normal school? Do I private school? Do I, all of these things. There's so much shame associated with how we parent our children. There's even more shame, though, if we've got issues around our own mental health in that space, or if we're reacting from our own trauma and parenting in a way that wouldn't be considered socially acceptable anymore.
Because a lot of trauma is shame-based as well, isn't it? Like sexual violence.
Yes.
For starters.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting because why?
Mm.
Oh, why should that be shameful?
Yeah.
For the person who it was inflicted upon.
Yeah.
It's crazy, isn't it? And yet we are so shamed.
Mm.
When it comes to that, and it impacts on our life for the rest of our lives until you go through trauma therapy, right, Philippa?
Yes, Pippa, that's right. Yeah, and so that shame stops us often from getting the support and the help that we need. So if
bingo, totally. I'm just writing my little book at the moment, and I'm talking about when I worked in the refugee camp in Ethiopia.
Yeah,
and I hate to say this because I am a midwife, and in a weird way, I'm kind of shameful of saying this, but with that mission, the greatest joy of my life, of my work there, drum roll, because this is going to really creep you out. I don't think I've told you this, is facilitating abortions.
Yeah.
Because these women were raped out of war. And when an African woman has this done to her, it's ultra shame. She is ostracized. She can even die. And if she does carry that baby full term, that baby most often is left under a tree. That is, if she hasn't been forced to marry her rapist.
Wow, yeah.
So this is shame based all around. But the thing is, and it broke my heart, is that there was lots of sexual violence, and we had this campaign that they could come within 3 days and they could get the morning after pill to stop pregnancy, HIV treatment to stop HIV, syphilis treatment to stop syphilis, or the STI treatment to stop any STIs that would come. Nobody came unless they were pregnant.
Wow.
And that is the biggest example of shame I think I can think of.
Mm, yeah. And it's still legal. In fact, reading that book, Consent Laid Bare, and if you have children, I suggest you read the book. It is simply phenomenal. And in terms of, you know, just understanding the culture and space around that stuff, it's really important to read. It's Chanel Contos who did the teacher's consent, but she changed some of the rules around how children were taught in school around consent and so on. You know, she talks about in there the fact that in some countries, men can get off on rape charges if they marry the victim. You know, and that's still legal in, I think,
and in some, and in some countries, the woman is put in jail.
Yes, that's right.
The woman,
right.
Is convicted.
Yeah, 100%.
That's something that I've witnessed too.
Yeah, right. So it's, you know, there's so much cultural, and even in Australian culture, you know, we have the very fact that women. Girls in high school are often forced to choose between being a prude or a slut, you know, starts that rape culture. It starts that idea that there is shame, and that she must choose. She can't be just sexually healthy and have desires and choose to partake in that, but that there is shame associated one way or another, whichever way she chooses. She's going to have shame, you know.
And for our young girls who are growing up, it is really important for them to have that strong sense of identity.
Yeah.
Isn't it? And so they're not shamed so much, like particularly when they start menstruating.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, the shame at school about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Massive. Yeah. And, you know, so I guess the thing that we can do in terms of, you know, overcoming this is, first of all, recognizing it as people, recognizing that shame is present, particularly for women in this culture, but that shame, and it exists for men also, but it'll come out in different ways and for different reasons. But accepting and understanding that shame is present, and we can choose to bow to shame and stay hidden in our shame, or we can choose to step out and say, actually, I'm not prepared to allow shame to stop me from doing the work or getting the help or asking the questions. And we see this so often on Facebook group, you know, messages where somebody will put an anonymous post because there's shame even in the asking for help around maybe how do I toilet train my toddler. Some of the things that you might think are so innocent or so shame-free can cause shame for people. So I think in acknowledging shame's existence and pervasiveness in our culture, but also in saying, well, I get that it's there, but I'm not going to bow to it. I'm going to choose to step out beyond that so that I can get the help and support that I actually need. I think it's a big thing. And then raising our children without that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And also recognizing it in the first place. Because a lot of times we'll be in situations and or we'll be doing something or something will happen and we don't realize that we're feeling shame because it is such in our subconscious and our unconscious that we just don't realize that it's there.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, we haven't actually analyzed what it is that we feel. Do you have a tip on how you help people do that, figure out what they're actually feeling?
Yeah, yeah, just by sitting with it and feeling it. Where in your body is it? Where do you feel it? What does it look like? What does it sound like? Is it solid? Is it a gas? Is it liquid? Is it vibrating? Does it have a sound? And it's amazing when you're in that deep meditative state and you let your emotions in. When you think of something that was troubling you and you go, oh, okay. So this is what I'm feeling. And then by acknowledging our emotions through that, we can say thank you for keeping me safe.
Yeah. And I guess it's important for people to understand too that we aren't always familiar enough with ourselves, or we're too disassociated to be able to feel into our body in that way and to get
power. But this is where this is like, but we can train ourselves to do that. This is where this work's really important. It's amazing.
We can, but I've worked with women who feel shame because they don't, where they're not able to feel into that in the same way. And so they're not as body aware. And so and I love your suggestion, and it's a beautiful way to explore what's going on with you. If you're not ready for that yet though, because you're too disassociated or it's just not your language, then another way to do it is also to do what's called a stream of consciousness, where you take a piece of paper and a pen and you write for 10 minutes. Take whatever it is you're feeling and just write without concern for spelling, punctuation, grammar, any of it. Just write. You could be dot points. It could be all sorts of different things, but just write whatever is in there and allow whatever's sitting in your unconscious to become conscious. You may or may not read that afterwards. You may or may not be completely surprised about what it is you're actually, that what it is that you've found that's come out. And some people will choose to burn it afterwards as a release. And that can be, it can,
it's cathartic.
Right?
I've done that. It's cathartic.
Yeah. Very cathartic, right? But it's also quite enlightening because it gives you, it's when you're just writing, you're quite focused on the physical act, and whatever pops into your head, you just pop it on the paper, right? So it's a really great way to get some of what's inside you onto that conscious level and out onto the paper and begin to identify what it is that's sitting there for you while you're learning to become, or if your trauma is really deep and you're not able to sit with your body in that way yet, it can be an easier way to get started with that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And with that deep trauma work, that's stuff that you do, and it's incredible what you do. And the nervous system is just wired in such a different way with massive trauma. It's huge.
Look, Judith Richards is possibly one of the greatest gifts to the world for what she has brought about with TRTP. It really is a gift to the world. And, you know, she paid a high price for it because obviously all the trauma that she had to go through in order to be so committed to finding healing. And then to be so committed and so passionate about making sure that that healing is brought to as many people as possible.
And she's coming here too soon, isn't she?
To our podcast?
Yeah.
Yes, she is coming to our podcast soon. Yep. So I'm super, super excited about that. That'll be an amazing episode to talk to her about that.
Absolutely. So stay tuned for that, everybody. That should be awesome.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the thing about it is that, you know, when we talk about shame, often people don't want to share their deepest, darkest secrets. They don't want to go into all of that stuff and bring it all up because it means feeling the shame. It means feeling all of those bits. And I think one of the most beautiful parts of TRTP is that we don't have to go into the story and we don't have to sit in it and tell it and bring all of that fear and shame and trauma up. We just fix it. And I think it makes it a lot easier for people to get that help when they know that they're not going to have to dredge it all up again and sit in the shame.
Yeah, because it's a dredging up that continues the cycle of being caught in the whole victim mentality of it all, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
just perpetuate.
Yep, totally. So I guess our message here today is really that shame is a part of life as a woman, as a parent. It's part of life in lots and lots of different cultures around the world. And our message is that you don't have to be constrained by it if you don't want to be. If you choose not to be, you can allow other choices to bring you out of that space, so that the shame that you experience that isn't teaching you anything and isn't in your benefit can be dealt with. Because, you know, shame in its essence, it tells us when we've done something wrong. That as an emotion, that's what it's there for. It's there to make us feel like, oh, you know what? Yeah, I did the wrong thing there.
Right? But it doesn't mean you're a bad person. It doesn't mean you're a bad person though, Philippa, does it? It just means I've done this bad thing, but we put it on ourselves. That we are the bad person.
Yeah. So shame is designed to
teach us. Part of the human experience. Yeah.
That's right.
Part of that human experience, but you accept it and you move on.
Yeah. So it's when we get stuck in the shame and we allow the shame to stop us from being the best we can be, because, you know, it's like everything. We can have an emotion and learn from it, and then when it's not serving us anymore, we need to choose to move it on and choose a different way of being. So rather than getting stuck in that, it's the same with every emotion. They're there to be felt and heard but they are not there to be listened to and obeyed, right?
It's energy in motion that comes and it goes.
That's right.
We don't need it to become issues in our tissues.
Yeah, that's right.
It's interesting with Chinese medicine. I know we're wrapping up, but I just want to put my two bobs worth in with the Chinese medicine perspective, because you know I'm really into Qigong and Chinese medicine and all that. But in Chinese medicine, there's five major organs and minor organs attached to those organs, right? Mm-hmm. And they believe that all those major organs have emotions attached to them.
Okay.
And it's so, for instance, your liver is anger and frustration, your lungs are grief, your spleen is worry, your kidneys are fear, and your heart is passion.
Yeah.
But what happens, and this is the Chinese medicine perspective, is that when we have trapped emotions that haven't been processed yet, the energy gets stuck in our body. So with these organs, you can see these organs as, say, great big lakes. And the energy lines called meridians, they're like the rivers. So if our lakes, our emotions that are stuck in our liver, our kidneys, our lungs, our spleen, whatever, if it's trapped in there, then it can actually cause harm. Mm. It can actually cause disease.
Mm.
And it's through the energy work, through Qigong or through running, through exercise is amazing, and through breath work as well, through all these different modalities that we can actually move these emotions, these trapped emotions on.
Yeah, beautiful.
And I find that absolutely fascinating. There's this guy in Bali, I think he lived. You can actually look at this on YouTube. And he was an energy guru, absolute energy guru. He is someone that he was superhuman. And he actually made fire from his hand, from the energy from his hand. And it's on YouTube, you know, like he was very, very famous for it. But he used so much of his energy from his liver that he ended up dying from liver cancer.
Wow.
Because he wasn't replenishing it. That's the story anyway behind it.
Well, there you go. I learned something new today. Never heard of
it. Yeah. It's interesting. Love it. Anyway, my darling.
Well, thank you again for an incredible conversation. Look, our hope is that this, it's so interesting how it works. I did a reel the other day and talked about how, as you know, when we're putting our children to bed, if we want to be somewhere else, our kids can feel it and they'll hold on. And one of the mums said on TikTok, she got that, she's like, now I have mum guilt. And I'm like, no, please don't feel guilty. Just use the information to move on and make future decisions with this information in mind. And that's what we're asking you to do. Don't feel guilty. Don't feel like this, you know, you're a bad person if you've been living in shame.
No, it's part of the human condition. It's part of our emotions.
The idea is to shed light on it, to say we've all been there. We all experience shame in some way, shape, or form. What we're inviting you to do is step out of the shadows and into a space where you can make some choices around that for yourself. So that's what we want to leave you with is, you know, step into the light, step into the best version of you so that you can be the parent that you want to be and the person that you want to be and the partner that you want to be. That does not mean I'm going to start going to the toilet in front of my husband. I'm choosing to keep that.
I've got this visualization, Philippa. Thank you.
Anyway, have fun with it, folks. This is life. It's messy. It's fabulous. And thank you again for having this conversation with me, Pippa.
Yeah, good on you, Philippa. See you later.
Bye. Hello and welcome to Philippa Squared, Parenting by Design. You're joining myself, Philippa Scott, and my beautiful co-host, Pippa Cox. Hi, Pippa.
Hi, Philippa. How are you today? Have you changed over the last 10 minutes that we were talking before?
No, I'm good. I'm still good.
You're still good. I see you got some beautiful lippy on. That's gorgeous. We've got some really, really exciting news, guys. Would you like, can I divulge the news?
Yeah.
Okay. So our dear darling, Philippa Scott, has been nominated for Businesswoman of the Year with our local business, Sunshine Coast Business Women's Network. So that's a massive, massive honour. So my hat goes off for you. A lot of hard work.
Thank you.
And it's awesome. Well done. Well done for you.
It was a privilege to have been nominated. It was very exciting to have been made a finalist. And by the time you're all hearing this, we'll know whether or not I actually won anything. But it's a privilege to even just be amongst those women who are making such a big impact in their communities. So thank you, Pippa, for acknowledging.
It's awesome, yeah. Just had to let the cat out of the bag. Just had to do that.
Well, thank you.
Because this is not contributed to anything about what we're going to talk about today, is it? About shame.
Yeah. So we really wanted to talk about shame today because we feel that it's something that just doesn't get talked about enough, but it seems to be quite pervasive, particularly for women, around conception, pregnancy, birth, breastfeeding, and they're not into parenting and being a housewife to some degree, and the shame that seems to be associated for women in all of that. And, you know, I'm sure you've heard it time and time again, you know, the idea about when you're teaching someone, even around their menstrual cycle, or teaching someone about how to know when they're ovulating, and you'll say, you know, what does your mucus feel like? What is, you know, how does your cervix feel? And people will say, women will say, well, I've never felt my cervix. We're like, well, your husband or your partner has. Why haven't you? You know, but there's shame in those experiences, and or there's a perceived shame in those experiences and what that looks like. You know, we're told we can't do our own vaginal exams during labor because, well, that wouldn't be.
We might get it wrong, for crying out loud. Come on, Philippa. How do we not know our own bodies? We might get that wrong.
Yeah, well, and you know what? It's so not even hard, right? But We talk about it being a professional skill, but every 15-year-old boy on the planet just about's done a vaginal exam, right? Like we talk about it being such a big thing, but you know, okay, it might not be prescriptive or anything else, but it's certainly not something that is taboo for women to be able to feel and know their own bodies on this level. But that shame goes far beyond. It goes to birth, right? I mean, what's the number one thing women are scared of during labor?
Pooping.
Pooping, right? They don't want to defecate during labor. And I distinctly remember the only birth I did defecate in was my fourth baby. And I remember her coming through. She was born really quickly, like she was a whole kilo lighter than her sister before. So I think it must have been like throwing a bowling ball down the hallway. She just kind of flew out. But all of a sudden, there's this baby's head on my perineum. And I said, shh, yes. And honey said, yes, but is there baby too? Which, you know, was funny then and it's funny now, but it is a big, you know, there's all this shame around what our bodies do, right?
So the interesting thing exactly about shame is that it's a social construct that we have adopted ourselves. It's like saying something is there, but it makes me bad. Not that that thing is bad.
Yeah.
But that thing is making me a bad person.
Yes. Yes.
So someone.
And yep, I feel like this is pretty new, because if you were on a ship crossing from, you know, I don't know, England to France even, or anywhere back in medieval times or before the advent of actual toilets, you had to defecate in a bucket, right? Like, and everybody had to do these things all within cooee of everyone else and then deal with it. And everybody was okay with it. And yet,
yeah,
we're not. We are supposed to be the most liberal, and yet we have all this shame around our own bodies.
Right? Yeah, and particularly with toileting. And the interesting thing is with toileting is that you go to different countries and they've got rooms and private in public toilets where people defecate together.
Yeah,
you've got people in India who defecate on the side of a road, though that is becoming less and less because India has got a put your poo in the loo campaign, public health campaign.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, which is kind of really cool. But it's still happening today, but in different cultures, toileting and ablutions isn't shameful. It's just seems as normal as eating.
Yeah. 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 Well, and look, we had this conversation, my husband and I, recently, because we just acquired a van where he was talking about refurbing it and maybe not having a full room and maybe just having like a toilet space that could have a bench over the top of it and you could just lift it up and then you could just go in there. And he said to me, oh, I don't mind if you go to the toilet while I'm there. I'm like, well, what if I mind? He's like, yeah, but you leave the door open all the time when you go to the toilet. I'm like, but you can't see me and I don't invite you in to talk to me while I'm going. Right? And I know there are lots of couples who do share that and we just have never. I have no issues with him being there when I birth or all the other things, but that's one thing that I'd like to be able to do alone, and I do. So, we have these different things that we feel shame for, but those, you know, and you're right, it's a very much a socially constructed idea. What I think we see most, and so obviously there's all this shame that kind of happens around, you know, conception, menarche, pregnancy, birth, breastfeeding and you know, hiding our breasts, even though, you know, we'll go to a local beach with not much more than a little triangle over our nipples. And so we have these, but, you know, but obviously, but once we're showing our breasts for what they're designed for, that they're shameful all of a sudden and we want to keep that hidden. And so we have all this socially constructed stuff around that. But that's a much shorter space in a person's life than when we then have shame around our parenting and shame around, you know, the role that we have, the shame that often exists for women in, do I go back to work? Do I not go back to work? Do I co-sleep? Do I not co-sleep? Do I bottle feed? Do I breastfeed? Do I, all of these things. And, you know, do I homeschool? Do I send them to normal school? Do I private school? All of these things. There's so much shame associated with how we parent our children. There's even more shame, though, if we've got issues around our own mental health in that space, or if we're reacting from our own trauma and parenting in a way that wouldn't be considered socially acceptable anymore.
Because a lot of trauma is shame-based as well, isn't it? Like sexual violence.
Yes.
For starters.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting, because why?
Mm.
Oh, why should that be shameful?
Yeah.
For the person who it was inflicted upon.
Yeah.
It's crazy, isn't it? And yet we are so shamed when it comes to that. And it impacts on our life for the rest of our lives until you go through trauma therapy. Right, Philippa?
Yes, Pippa, that's right. Yeah. And so that shame stops us often from getting the support and the help that we need. So
Bingo, totally. I'm just writing my little book at the moment, and I'm talking about when I worked in the refugee camp in Ethiopia.
Yeah.
And I hate to say this because I am a midwife, and in a weird way, I'm kind of shameful of saying this, but with that mission, the greatest joy of my life, of my work there, drum roll, because this is going to really creep you out. I don't think I've told you this, is facilitating abortions.
Yeah.
Because these women were raped out of war. And when an African woman has this done to her, it's ultra shame. She is ostracized. She can even die. And if she does carry that baby full term, that baby most often is left under a tree. That is, if she hasn't been forced to marry her rapist.
Wow, yeah.
So this is shame-based all around. But the thing is, and it broke my heart, is that there was lots of sexual violence, and we had this campaign that they could come within 3 days and they could get the morning after pill to stop pregnancy, HIV treatment to stop HIV, syphilis treatment to stop syphilis, or the STI treatment to stop any STIs that would come. Nobody came unless they were pregnant.
Wow.
And that is the biggest example of shame I think I can think of.
Yeah. And it's still legal. In fact, reading that book, Consent Laid Bare, and if you have children, I suggest you read the book. It is simply phenomenal. And in terms of, you know, just understanding the culture and space around that stuff, it's really important to read. It's Chanel Contos who did the teacher's consent? But she changed some of the rules around how children were taught in school around consent and so on. You know, she talks about in there the fact that in some countries, men can get off on rape charges if they marry the victim. You know, and that's still legal in, I think,
and in some, and in some countries, the woman is put in jail.
Yes, that's right.
The woman,
right.
Is convicted.
Yeah, 100%.
That's something that I've witnessed too.
Yeah, right. So it's, you know, there's so much cultural, and even in Australian culture, you know, we have the very fact that women, girls in high school are often forced to choose between being a prude or a slut, you know, starts that rape culture. It starts that idea that there is shame, and that she must choose. She can't be just sexually healthy and have desires and choose to partake in that, but that there is shame associated one way or another, whichever way she chooses. She's going to have shame, you know.
And so our young girls who are growing up, it is really important for them to have that strong sense of identity.
Yeah.
Isn't it? And so they're not shamed so much, like particularly when they start menstruating.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, the shame at school about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Massive. Yeah. And, you know, so I guess the thing that we can do in terms of, you know, overcoming this is, first of all, recognizing it as people, recognizing that shame is present, particularly for women in this culture, but that shame, and it exists for men also, but it'll come out in different ways and for different reasons. But accepting and understanding that shame is present. And we can choose to bow to shame and stay hidden in our shame, or we can choose to step out and say, actually, I'm not prepared to allow shame to stop me from doing the work or getting the help or asking the questions. And we see this so often on Facebook group, you know, messages where somebody will put an anonymous post, because there's shame even in the asking for help around maybe how do I toilet train my toddler. Some of the things that you might think are so innocent or so shame-free can cause shame for people. So I think in acknowledging shame's existence and pervasiveness in our culture, but also in saying, well, I get that it's there, but I'm not going to bow to it. I'm going to choose to step out beyond that so that I can get the help and support that I actually need. I think it's a big thing. And then raising our children without that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And also recognizing it in the first place. Because a lot of times we'll be in situations and or we'll be doing something or something will happen and we don't realize that we're feeling shame. Because it is such in our subconscious and our unconscious that we just don't realize that it's there.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, we haven't actually analyzed what it is that we feel. Do you have a tip on how you help people do that, figure out what they're actually feeling?
Yeah, just by sitting with it and feeling it. Where in your body is it? Where do you feel it? What does it look like? What does it sound like? Is it solid? Is it a gas? Is it liquid? Is it vibrating? Does it have a sound? And it's amazing when you're in that deep meditative state and you let your emotions in. When you think of something that was troubling you and you go, oh, okay. So this is what I'm feeling. And then by acknowledging our emotions through that, we can say thank you for keeping me safe.
Yeah. And I guess it's important for people to understand too that we aren't always familiar enough with ourselves, or we're too disassociated to be able to feel into our body in that way and to get
power. But this is where this is like, but we can train ourselves to do that. This is where this work's really important. It's amazing.
We can, but I've worked with women who feel shame because they don't, where they're not able to feel into that in the same way. And so they're not as body aware. And so, and I love your suggestion, and it's a beautiful way to explore what's going on with you. If you're not ready for that yet though, because you're too disassociated or it's just not your language, then another way to do it is also to do what's called a stream of consciousness, where you take a piece of paper and a pen and you write for 10 minutes. Take whatever it is you're feeling and just write without concern for spelling, punctuation, grammar, any of it. Just write. You could be dot points. It could be all sorts of different things, but just write whatever is in there and allow whatever's sitting in your unconscious to become conscious. You may or may not read that afterwards. You may or may not be completely surprised about what it is you're actually, that what it is that you've found that's come out. And some people will choose to burn it afterwards as a release. And that can be, it can.
It's cathartic.
Right?
I've done that. It's cathartic.
Yeah. Very cathartic, right? But it's also quite enlightening because it gives you, it's when you're just writing, you're quite focused on the physical act. And whatever pops into your head, you just pop it on the paper, right? So it's a really great way to get some of what's inside you onto that conscious level and out onto the paper and begin to identify what it is that's sitting there for you while you're learning to become, or if your trauma is really deep and you're not able to sit with your body in that way yet. It can be an easier way to get started with that kind of thing.
Yeah. And with that deep trauma work, that stuff that you do, and it's incredible what you do. And the nervous system is just wired in such a different way with massive trauma. It's huge.
Look, Judith Richards is possibly one of the greatest gifts to the world. For what she has brought about with TRTP, it really is a gift to the world. And, you know, she paid a high price for it because obviously all the trauma that she had to go through in order to be so committed to finding healing, and then to be so committed and so passionate about making sure that that healing is brought to as many people as possible.
And she's coming here too soon, isn't she?
To our podcast?
Yeah.
Yes, she is coming to our podcast soon. Yep. So I'm super, super excited about that. That'll be an amazing episode to talk to her about that.
Absolutely. So stay tuned for that, everybody. That should be awesome.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the thing about it is that, you know, when we talk about shame, often people don't want to share their deepest, darkest secrets. They don't want to go into all of that stuff and bring it all up because it means feeling the shame. It means feeling all of those bits. And I think one of the most beautiful parts of TRTP is that we don't have to go into the story and we don't have to sit in it and tell it and bring all of that fear and shame and trauma up. We just fix it. And I think it makes it a lot easier for people to get that help when they know that they're not going to have to dredge it all up again and sit in the shame.
Yeah, because it's a dredging up that continues the cycle of being caught in the whole victim mentality of it all, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
just perpetuate.
Yep, totally. So I guess our message here today is really that shame is a part of life as a woman, as a parent. It's part of life in lots and lots of different cultures around the world. And our message is that you don't have to be constrained by it if you don't want to be. If you choose not to be, you can allow other choices to bring you out of that space, so that the shame that you experience that isn't teaching you anything and isn't in your benefit can be dealt with. Because, you know, shame in its essence, it tells us when we've done something wrong. That as an emotion, that's what it's there for. It's there to make us feel like, oh, you know what? Yeah, I did the wrong thing there.
Right? But it doesn't mean you're a bad person. It doesn't mean you're a bad person though, Philippa, does it? It just means I've done this bad thing, but we put it on ourselves. That we are the bad person.
Yes. And shame is designed to teach us.
Part of the human experience. Yep.
That's right.
Part of that human experience, but you accept it and you move on.
Yeah. So it's when we get stuck in the shame and we allow the shame to stop us from being the best we can be, because, you know, it's like everything. We can have an emotion and learn from it, and then when it's not serving us anymore, we need to choose to move it on and choose a different way of being. So rather than getting stuck in that, it's the same with every emotion. They're there to be felt and heard, but they are not there to be listened to and obeyed, right?
It's energy and motion that comes and it goes.
That's right.
We don't need it to become issues in our tissues.
Yeah, that's right.
It's interesting. With Chinese medicine, I know we're wrapping up, but I just want to put my two bobs worth in with the Chinese medicine perspective, because, you know, I'm really into Qigong and Chinese medicine and all that. In Chinese medicine, there's five major organs and minor organs attached to those organs, right? Mm-hmm. And they believe that all those major organs have emotions attached to them.
Okay.
And it's, so for instance, your liver is anger and frustration, your lungs are grief, your spleen is worry, your kidneys are fear, and your heart is passion. But what happens, and this is the Chinese medicine perspective, is that when we have trapped emotions that haven't been processed yet, the energy gets stuck in our body. Mm. So with these organs, you can see these organs as, say, great big lakes, and the energy lines called meridians, they're like the rivers. So if our lakes our emotions that are stuck in our liver, our kidneys, our lungs, our spleen, whatever, if it's trapped in there, then it can actually cause harm. Mm. It can actually cause disease. Mm. And it's through the energy work, through Qigong or through running, through exercise. Exercise is amazing. And through breath work as well, through all these different modalities that we can actually move these emotions, these trapped emotions on.
Yeah,
beautiful. And I find that absolutely fascinating. Fascinating. There's this guy in Bali, I think he lived. You can actually look at this on YouTube. And he was an energy guru, absolute energy guru. He is someone that could, he was superhuman. And he actually made fire from his hand, from the energy from his hand. And it's on YouTube, you know, like he was very, very famous for it. But he used so much of his energy from his liver that he ended up dying from liver cancer.
Wow.
Because he wasn't replenishing it. That's the story anyway behind it.
Well, there you go. I learned something new today. Never heard
of it. Yeah, it's interesting. Love it. Anyway, my darling.
Well, thank you again for an incredible conversation. Look, our hope is that this, it's so interesting how it works. I did a reel the other day and talked about how, as you know, when we're putting our children to bed, if we want to be somewhere else, our kids can feel it and they'll hold on. And one of the mums said on TikTok, she got that. She's like, now I have mum guilt. And I'm like, no, please don't feel guilty. Just use the information to move on and make future decisions with this information in mind. And that's what we're asking you to do. Don't feel guilty. Don't feel like this, you know, you're a bad person if you've been living in shame.
No, it's part of the human condition. It's part of our emotions.
The idea is to shed light on it, to say we've all been there. We all experience shame in some way, shape or form. What we're inviting you to do is step out of the shadows and into a space where you can make some choices around that for yourself. So that's what we want to leave you with is, you know, step into the light, step into the best version of you so that you can be the parent that you want to be and the person that you want to be and the partner that you want to be. That does not mean I'm going to start going to the toilet in front of my husband. I'm choosing to keep that.
I've got this visualization, Philippa. Thank you.
Anyway, have fun with it, folks. This is life. It's messy. It's fabulous. And thank you again for having this conversation with me, Pippa.
Yeah, good on you, Philippa. See you later.
Bye.